This is GeekSpeak, episode 18 of our 16th season, and our last frequency-modulated broadcast. You're listening to Independent Public Radio 88.9 KOSP Santa Cruz and streaming live worldwide at KOSP.org. It's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP or any of the geeks-affiliated organizations. Hey, everybody. I'm Lyle Troxell, the host and producer of GeekSpeak for the last 16 years on KOSP. This is our last FM broadcast of GeekSpeak. Now we're kind of talking about the wrap-up of a show that we've been on air. Now, GeekSpeak's going to continue to be on podcast. We've been doing that for, 10 years, something like that. And I do welcome you and invite you to participate by subscribing to our GeekSpeak program. You can find out more information at geekspeak.org. Today, I've called a call out to a whole bunch of geeks that we've had on the program over the years, over the 16 years of me hosting. In fact, the program is actually older than that. But let's start out with someone who's here almost every week, Mr. Ben Jaffe, a teacher, world traveler, programmer, and music geek. Hey, Ben.
Good day. I was thinking about memories, actually, coming back to the station, because we've been recording from Netflix or from my house or various other locations over the last, I guess, year or something. Mm-hmm. But coming back to the station brought back a lot of memories. And I was thinking about how for most of the shows that we recorded at the station, I was almost always the first one who was at the station. And I'd get here around like 8:30 in the morning. You'd roll in around 9:15 and we'd go on air at 10 o'clock.
Sure.
But I'm wondering if you remember the one show that I was extremely late for, which was my second show on the air, I think it was, and I woke up and realized, oh my God, it's 10:30. This is the middle of GeekSpeak. I've missed the show. Oh no, Lyle's going to kill me. And so I don't know what I was thinking. I was in a stupor, and I called you, and you picked up the phone on the air, and you said, "Hi, Ben, we're on the air right now. If you want to drive to the station and join, you're welcome to."
I did that on air?
Yeah, and then you hung up.
So I didn't actually talk to you on air. I just like spoke to you and then
you just spoke to me and hung up. And so I sped over the station and I made it for the last 20 minutes.
I don't remember that. That's fantastic.
That was a fun show.
Yeah. It has been hard not doing the show in the air room. I'm really glad our last broadcast when we're coming down to the air room, because it's a wonderful space.
Yeah. It feels like home.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Well, thank you, Ben, for being here. We also, in the air room, have someone who's been on the show since the second episode I was ever on, and for years has taken over the hosting role and has been a regular contributor of GeekSpeak, Mr. Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie. And Miles is on mic four, I think. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I think actually was the
third
episode.
Get to that, Mike. That mic's dead.
Actually, I think it was the third episode.
Oh, it was. Third episode that I took over. Yeah, yeah.
September of 2000.
Nice.
Back in the day, yeah. So I'm remembering all sorts of cases where we got preempted by the Iraqi war.
Sure.
Got preempted by...
Prior to the Iraqi war, or actually I think, prior to the Iraqi war, we were on air every single week. And it was very easy to remember how many episodes we'd done and everything. And all of a sudden we were preempted for like three episodes. And then all my counting just lost. I don't know what episode we're on.
Right. Obviously not the worst thing to happen from the Iraqi war in that time. But... yeah, all sorts of things coming in at the very last minute, like rushing in. I remember calling in once where I was trying to come in. I realized that I was missing the show because I turned on the radio on a KOSP and I heard the theme song and went, "Oh, that's interesting. GeekSpeak is playing. That's because I'm not there."
So you had that experience too.
Yes, I have.
I hope everybody's story is not that. We've got like eight more to go through. Miles, I got to say that doing this program throughout the years, one of the things that has been really meaningful to me is holding on my relationship with you, because we get to see each other regularly.
Are you going to cry?
Yeah, I'm crying. Oh, God. Didn't mean to do that. Sorry. Now you've actually traditionally were late. Like, that's just what happened. You were always late. You'd run the door. And I remember I remember introducing the geeks and your name was in there and you were not in the air room at all. You weren't even in the building. And then I'd cover a couple stories from other people and then you'd walk in the door and I'd cover a story. No one ever knew.
And a lot, seamless.
That's awesome. It's awesome. Well, and you're still committed to keep on doing the podcast with me.
Absolutely.
All right, great. I'm so glad to hear that. So we did some searching long and far, and I think the person that traveled the farthest to get here is Dee Dee Hubbard. Now, Dee Dee was a UCSC student who – am I – no, Dee Dee, you're on, man. I already started talking about you. Dee Dee is a software engineer working under and over the cloud. She's been traveling a lot, and she's also a roller derby nut, which comes with her position as CTO of a rolling derby group, yeah?
Women's Flat Track Derby Association.
Awesome. And you traveled a ways to get here, and you haven't been on the show for quite a while because you moved away and then finally came back to California. So,
yeah, I guess it's been maybe like 6 years or so.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. Thank you so much for being here. Get a memory or thought to share with us?
I'm just going back to my time in Santa Cruz, how much I really loved it here as a student at UCSC. And when you asked me to do the show, it was sort of really exciting, and I was really nerve-wracked about the whole thing. But once they sort of started joining the geeks, which is sort of like a happy family, and talking to the Santa Cruz community at large, it sort of made me feel a little bit more connected to Santa Cruz as a place instead of just a campus. So yeah. I have fond memories of that.
I remember about 3 months into you being on the show regularly, I said, man, you were like, you'd already decided to go to grad school at this point. Like, you came on the show, we're on the show for a while, then you were planning grad school, you were a senior, you're leaving. And I was like, man, I should have had you come on earlier. And you had some whippy comment back to me like, yeah, well, I was available and you just didn't. You know, it was like very much like, yeah, you're lost. And then you left us.
How long were we working side by side?
For years. That? Yeah, definitely.
Just saying, Lyle.
Thank you, Dee Dee. Thank you for being here. And Dee Dee, of course, is a software engineer. I already said that. All right. So a person I met because of the internet, at one point, benloman.org, I wanted to see who owned it because I live in Ben Lomond. I was raised there. I love the town. And so I went ahead and went online and did a search and found the person who owned benloman.org. And I sent him an email and I said, hey, can I get a subdomain? And he's like, sure. And we had a correspondence. Then years later, we have kids at the same time. We're at a park and we're talking. And we're like really geeking out. This is Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Hi, Al.
Hi.
Do you remember this? We're chatting at the field, and finally, I was like, we should change information.
We didn't know each other.
No, we didn't know each other.
I heard from you just over an email.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, you can just have a spot in there. I'm not barely even using that domain. And then I just never heard, and I just gave you access. Like,
right. I think you gave me admin access. Yeah, sure.
Whatever
so
you want,
at this park, we're like, well, our kids know each other. We should send trade emails. So we trade emails. I start putting your info on my phone. And your info was already in my phone. We're like, whoa, we know each other. It felt really kind of surreal this internet connection became reality. And it was really cool.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
And, of course, we've been close friends since. Right. And for years on this program, you did the USB, crazy USB of the week. Because, of course, this is wonderful. So if you, as a regular Geek Speak listener, you'll remember crazy USB of the weeks. Al's made, I don't know, quite a bit of fun.
I always did them at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I was thinking about was that I had about 1 minute, and we'd always have stories that would go long, and you know, you'd be like, "Hell, you have 1 minute." You'd give me the signal, like 1 minute. I got 1 minute to do this whole thing, and so that, blah, 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 you know, get through the whole thing, and just make it at the very end, and you know, because you know, it's an NPR station, and there's this much time we have, and that's how it is, and that's all there is, and if you don't finish, you're cut off mid sentence. And so now, you know, with everything going, you know, automated, and we're just going straight to podcast, I think to myself, well, in a way, now we don't have that restriction of, you know, you have to cut off at exactly this moment.
You're saying we just ramble on and on and on.
We just ramble on and on and on. So in a way, it's a benefit, you know, to listeners who listen to podcasts, and our podcast listenership has always been huge, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we started early, and so we grew really quickly.
Right, yeah.
All right, let's see, where was I? Oh, yes, another friend who I met through kids and also is a highly technical person is Mr. Brian Young. He's an iOS developer, designer, and software conference producer. Hey.
Hey, Lyle, how you doing today?
Good.
So, I was really thinking, I was looking around the room, we've got this huge crew here today, and I was trying to figure out what brings us all together besides, of course, the show, but we are all friends in some way of you, and I was just thinking through all these things that we talk about and all these things that bring us together, and you know, we all have this love of tech. We all have this love of these things that we love to play with. And we're coming at it from different points of view. Many of us are developers. We've got Al here who's coming at it from the design perspective. And it just has been a real incredible experience to come on the show and just talk about this stuff. I was so nervous. And I remember listening to that show when we were doing, what was it, the 15th anniversary show? And hearing your voice quiver as you first do those first moments of welcome to Geek Speak.
Yeah.
And I just want to say thanks. Thanks for bringing us together and giving us a chance to talk about the things we love. But we've got tech. We've got these big philosophical ideas we talk about sometimes. We talk about fairness in both the tech industry at large and what we have two women represented here today. We have multiple races. This is awesome. And this is all because it's something that we all share together and we get to talk about it each week as well.
Thank you very much, Brian. Speaking of one of the fairer sexes, is that still something you should say? I don't think so, right?
I don't know.
Anyway, we've had a lot of people on the air for quite a while. Lindsay Lonnie has been through. You spent a fair amount of time. When was the first time you came on air with us?
That was in 2010.
2010.
Yeah.
And then you were consistently with us every other month, I would say, for a few years.
Right.
And now it's more like when you happen to be in town, because you moved away and you traveled and you're here coincidentally in California. So mm-hmm. I guess you're actually kind of the furthest traveler in the sense that you stayed for an extra week just to be on air with us for our final broadcast show. So thank you, Lindsay Lonnie. She's a web programmer and intrepid traveler, and she is currently looking for work in the Santa Cruz, Greater Monterey Bay area. So if you are looking for a web developer, please email geeks@geekspeak.org and we'll hook you up with Lindsay, who is awesome. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. It's great to be here. I'm so grateful for the opportunity that you guys gave me with this show. And it feels like family here. I'm grateful for the radio station. I had a memory just now. Do you remember that time that we tried to do a show from the back of a truck and it was raining in the parade?
Yes.
That's one of my favorite foible memories. I loved that. It was so much fun.
I just found pictures of that recently. Yeah, we did a parade, Santa Cruz parade, twice, and it's a winter parade, so it happens in December. We have some great time-lapse video we'll hook up to this episode website that Al and I did. But the first year was great. It was clear and dry. The second year we did it again, and we had to drive down Pacific Avenue under a plastic tarp recording a live show. It wasn't even recording. It was broadcasting a live show. We actually did it from the back of a truck.
Right.
And it was horribly wet. And yeah. I think the show was really bad. But it was fun.
Yeah, we had a blast. Anyway, I've had women's groups approach me since I started doing the show. And I've had more opportunities to help people than I would have before. Mm-hmm. So I'm really grateful for that. Like a local youth group approached me and I was able to help that way. And some group from Ohio approached me and asked me to do a webcast for young girls to join math programs. And so that was really great. Anyway, I'm really thankful for the opportunity and, you know, let's keep doing the podcast. It'll be fun.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Now, our newest member, I could be wrong. Brian actually might be our newest member, but someone who's never actually been on GeekSpeak, but has been supporting us for 2 years plus, I think. Chandler Muller is our intern, and you hear me thank him every week because he makes our website happen and also gets all of our stories coalesced and organized, and is just a great, amazing asset behind the scenes. So here is Chandler Muller's first time on mic. Chandler, thank you for being here. Oh, no, I didn't have the mic up. Go ahead, do it again.
Well, I don't actually think this is my first time. I think I might have coughed or something in the background.
That's true. You might have coughed. I think actually one time we did record a pitch break or something and you came on for a second. But this is the first live, I believe. But maybe not. Anyways, thank you for being here. And you're working on your expertise right now as a college student at UCSC, working on your CS degree, yeah?
Yeah.
What's the hardest thing you've done so far there?
I would say right now it's this algorithm class I'm taking. It's quite difficult, but it's really interesting.
Last week, or a couple weeks ago, we were all chatting. Every week when we record, we actually have Chandler listening via Hangout, and as we do also Greg, who's listening right now and will be titling the show. But Chandler is informing us afterwards. We talk about his CS degree, and I don't have a CS degree. Miles, do you have a CS degree?
No, that would be literature.
Yeah, literature. Right? So we're chatting, and you're bringing up stuff from your class that I do not understand and know what you're talking about. And that's a really wonderful experience, I have to say, as a professional programmer. So congratulations on being one up on me.
Thank you.
All right. Did you have anything else to say? You're good?
Hi.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Why haven't you been on mic before? That your voice is perfect for radio.
Yeah. You have a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
All right. So someone who's been around on GeekSpeak for quite a long time. In fact, early on in the program started in 1998, in March of 1998. And the people that actually started it were the founders of Cruzeo, specifically Chris Nicholson, and actually of Gunther Computers, I don't know if it's still around, Steve Schaefer.
He moved,
yeah. And they actually started GeekSpeak as a call-in tech show, part of Talk of the Bay, which was a half-an-hour slice throughout the week on evenings that talked about the Central Coast of California. And because Chris Nicholson has this large company, Cruise on Internet, at some point Peggy DeLongis also...
Dulgeness
started, and they've both been on the program many times. One of the things I didn't know is the connection and why the person that became the board op and also the person that helped run GeekSpeak in the early days, Mark Hanford, who's here with me. Hi, Mark.
Hey.
And Mark is actually a co-founder of GeekSpeak, and he's a Vespa riding, bass playing systems engineer at Cruzeo. You're kind of CTO at Cruzeo, right?
No, I'm just my title is chief systems engineer, but I'm part of the development team, and I've been there for 18 plus years.
So yeah,
I kind of have my finger in everything. So
you actually became to Santa Cruz because of the internet and because of radio. Barbara Diamond, who's a family friend of mine, used to run the front office for.
She was the KSB. Listener services coordinator.
Thank you very much. She was here all the time whenever I'd come in as a kid, and she started hanging out on a new thing called IRC, which is Internet Chat Relay or some kind of chat system, and ran into you. Where were you at the time when you met her?
I was in Boise, Idaho.
Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, and I'd been doing radio for 10 years, both commercial and public. I did a punk show for 10 years on the local public station, and I was doing talk radio, AM talk radio, just commercial radio to make a living. So we just started chatting on IRC, just in a chat room.
This is 1995, right?
94 or 95, right around there. She probably knows the date, but I'm a guy. I have no idea. It was right around 95, yeah.
And you got to know each other well enough that you decided to move to California.
We got to know each other well enough that I decided to visit California. Uh-huh. And came down and visited, and over a course of about 2 years and $300 a month phone bills, because we tried to use online chat, but voice chat, but it just didn't work over a 33.6 modem.
Right.
That our phone bills were like $300 a month. So I'd come visit every couple months. She'd come visit me every couple months. And then after a couple of years, I moved down here. So.
And I know that you wouldn't label it this way. For me, that's the first online, that's the earliest relationship I know of. It was started by an online relationship. And I've known many people since then who've gotten married after meeting. My sister got married after meeting her.
We weren't looking. Online. We just happened to be in the same chat room and both had a public radio background. So.
And of course, at that time, almost no one was there in these chat rooms, right? No one was online, really.
Yeah, I mean, you go into a chat, well, especially with IRC, because it was kind of a little bit geeky. There'd be 10, 15 people in a chat room, so... It wasn't that busy. So anyway,
So I think it's fascinating that early before. So when you even started working for Chris at and Peggy at Cruzeo, became the systems person there, and then of course they were doing a show, so you came in and started running the board because you had so much radio experience.
Yeah, exactly.
You did the show for 2 years as a call-in show,
right? And basically what happened is at that time I was just in tech support, and our head engineer left, and they made me head engineer, and with our head engineer gone, Chris and I needed to run the technical side of Cruzeo, and so we couldn't dedicate to being here on a Monday night and doing the show, because if something hit the fan over there, we couldn't be here.
Right.
So we decided that we should just stop the show, and they found you to do it.
Right. So. In fact, I was just a fill-in person. My father was running the station at the time. He said, hey, come help fill in for this while we find somebody. And it just kind of stuck. I think it stuck because Miles came aboard at that point.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah. So thank you so much for starting the program. So the program is about 18 years old, and I've been running it for about 16 years or so. Any case, thank you very much, Mark, for doing that and for supporting Cruzeo. Cruzeo is a great... Well, actually, I'll let Chandler talk about Cruzeo because, funny enough, our first our sponsoring of KOSP is by
Cruzeo, Internet's gigabit fiber broadband network, built and maintained in Santa Cruz County for home and business. More information at cruzeo.com or 459-6301.
I do have one thing to I wanted to mention. There's all these computers in here, right? When we started the show, there was no Wi-Fi in here. We didn't have smartphones because it was 98, right? We had flip phones.
And you didn't have laptops, really.
And we didn't have laptops that could hook to the internet.
Right.
I mean, not in here.
Right.
Right? So we were flying blind, as it were, compared to you guys who all have your laptops and are looking up things and everything else. That's probably why we did a lot of call-in back in the day. And we were kind of like half an hour of tech support on the air when we started, because people would call in and say, oh, I can't get my email. How do you, how do I do that? And,
yeah.
And so we were more like online or on air tech support for a half an hour a night. So,
yeah. And when Miles and I took over, we continued doing that. And at some point we moved to a full hour and did tech support in the beginning. And then at the second half, we'd do news. And over the years, we just stopped doing the tech support, mostly because I think the internet became mainstream while we did this program, so much so that there wasn't a need for the call-in tech support, in the sense that you can actually get tech support from professional companies at this point.
Yeah, we do 10, 15 minutes of news and then tech support.
Thing we did too as well. Hey, so you're listening to the last broadcast of GeekSpeak on independent public radio, KOSP. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me in the air room are eight amazing geeks that have helped make this program work for the last 18 years. And in a minute, we're going to talk a little bit about the future of media and in general media. But at this time, though, I just wanted to say that we are really wanting you to move forward in the media landscape, if you will. And so what we're doing is we're running a live event on the 21st. So if you're in the Central Coast area on May 21st at 10 o'clock in the morning, we're going to go on air with go on a live internet stream, but specifically recording a podcast of Dr. Don. So Ask Dr. Don will actually do a live show. We're inviting people to come down. Cruise.io has been gracious enough to host at the Cruise.io workspace. And so downtown Santa Cruz on May 21st, we'll start with Dr. Don doing a show about medicine. And then after that, I will describe with probably a few other geeks how podcasting works. We're inviting you to bring your tablets and your phones and your laptops down to Cruise.io Works during that morning, and we'll make sure that you know how to podcast, listen to podcasts, subscribe to them, and actually participate in this very rich new medium form. Radio, this station is going to change and close, but you don't have to let go of the shows you love. In fact, there's a plethora of content. In fact, more content now than ever before is at your fingertips in very interesting slices of interest. So if you're really interested in cardboard box folding, you can probably find a podcast about that. And this is an amazing time. What we're going to talk about actually now is a bit about where we are in media. But I welcome you, if you're in the Santa Cruz Central Coast area, to come down to Santa Cruz on May 21st to find out more information about this and to get free tickets, because we'd love to know how many people are coming, to figure out the seating and all that. Please visit live.geekspeak.org. Again, live.geekspeak.org. And you can learn more about what's going on. And of course, you can also get a free ticket, so reserve your spot with a free ticket. If you have any questions about this directly or want to know more about it, or maybe want to sponsor it or anything of that nature, please feel free to email us. We're geeks@geekspeak.org. All right. Lindsay's got a story for us that leads us into the stories. So hi, Lindsay.
Hey, how's it going? I'm just going to talk briefly about YouTube media.
Okay. Well, I've got to say I'm a little stressed because there's so many people in this room and everybody's standing. I'm the only one sitting. So let me breathe for a second. Please tell us about YouTube media.
Sure. No problem. So YouTube's fourth annual Brandcast happened Thursday night. It's an event that they host every year to court advertisers, basically saying, hey, our platform's great, so put your money here. The CEO announced at this one that on mobile alone, YouTube reaches more 18 to 49-year-olds than any network, broadcast or cable. And that's the first time they've ever been able to make a claim like that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
They also said that they reach more 18 to 49-year-olds during prime time than the top 10 TV shows combined.
Wait. So during prime time television, where most people are watching whatever, Frasier, right?
Exactly.
I'm out of date.
I don't know where most people allow.
You can watch Frasier on primetime television.
You used to be able to. Now you can watch it somewhere else. There's actually more people in that age range watching YouTube.
Exactly.
Than all the networks basically combined, all the top 10.
Right.
That's pretty impressive.
Right. They don't get specific about whether they're using the YouTube Prime services that are paid for with TV like channels, or they're just like cat videos, But
sure.
So the numbers are a little iffy, and the study was funded by Google. So, but the numbers are there.
Yeah.
And that's something. So at a time when TV networks are losing audiences, YouTube is growing in every region across every area. Yeah. So what they said that was actual facts was that Interpublic Group, which is one of the world's largest ad holding companies, plans to shift $250 million from traditional television to network, traditional TV networks to YouTube over the next year. So yeah, things are shifting. And they also said that over 21 million people tuned in to watch Coachella on YouTube. And that's
One of their red channel things?
No, it was the giant concert, and they did a live broadcast of it. So there was almost twice as many people tuned in for that to watch than the season finale of American Idol, to give you an idea of cable versus what people watch on YouTube.
And of course, YouTube is international as well, right? So it's not, it's different in that sense as well.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know if they're filtering the numbers for everyone right. versus the U.S., but, you know.
It's a massive impact on what we're consuming as a culture.
Right. And media is shifting, and that's part of what we're talking about today.
Yeah, so. Yeah, definitely.
Now, the big question that comes up, though, is which is more worthwhile or least worthwhile, reality TV shows or cat videos?
Well, subjective.
You mentioned cat videos, like, oh, maybe just cat videos kind of as a throw-off. And I got to say that entertainment is entertainment, engagement is engagement, right? When you hear a short story from a friend about falling in the ocean or something, right? Even if that's a relatively short story and not impactful in the sense that it represents all of culture or some amazingly important impact, it is a story of connecting to a person, right? And so this cat video, you know, it's a story connected to a cat. But there is meaning to all of these representations of people's creative endeavor.
Right. You know, it's not – I mean, I watched a video last night on YouTube. It was Adam Savage of Mythbusters and this girl in Sweden whose name I can't pronounce, Simone something, build a helmet that dispensed popcorn into your mouth.
I watched that. It was fantastic.
Right? But, I mean, it's on YouTube. That's, yeah. You know, that's 20 minutes on YouTube of watching – you know, this tech thing. So
yeah.
Entertaining, just like Mythbusters. So.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And only on YouTube.
I'm really interested, actually, Adam Sandler, they've been doing that video cast for quite a while and podcast. What the heck is it called?
Tested?
Somebody? Tested. Thank you. Tested. Great, great representation of content being created locally. Right? It's in San Francisco. Really creative people and all about technology. It's kind of, if you're interested in Geek Speak, you'd be interested in Tested, the video service. So, you know, I just... what I find is fascinating about this era that we're in, we've been doing this for a while in Geekspeak, we've been talking about this on Geekspeak a while, is that it's another shift in how we produce as a culture and how we consume as a culture, media and information. And I want to just talk about John Philip Sousa, a famous band orchestrator, 1900s, turn of the century. And when I think Mark Twain actually used the term canned music for cylinder records. They're cylindrical wax recordings, early recordings, and they're called canned. And that's actually where you get that term of canned music, the derogatory term. Of course, the quality on these things were horrible. Compared to a band leader like Sousa, these things were just crap. But they represented something important in our culture in the sense that a shared understanding of media started to emerge. You wouldn't just hear a performance of somebody. You'd hear the same performance shared. And there was something rich about that, but Sousa did not like it. And here's a quote from him. "These talking machines are going to ruin the artistic development of music in this country. When I was a boy, in front of every house in the summer evenings, you would find young people together singing the songs of the day or older songs. Today, you hear these infernal machines going night and day. We will not have a vocal cord left. The vocal cord will be eliminated by a process of evolution, as was the tale of man when he came from the apes." So Sousa, obviously, go ahead, Brian.
Wait. He's saying that we won't be able to speak soundly because these machines are going to speak for us?
He's taking liberty, you know, artistic license on
maybe
this.
Maybe a little far.
Yeah, but he is saying that we're going to lose the ability to be a musical group if we're always listening rather than performing.
And while we're talking about music, my partner actually studies folk music.
Uh-huh.
And she's been thinking a lot about, like, what is folk music in 2016? Because that music is music that you would have oral transmission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these tunes would all of the I guess the core essence of the tune would be preserved over the ages, even if the subtle differences between the different versions, if they were different, right? But as soon as you record a piece of music and you can play it back 20 years later, that's not going to change, right? And now you don't necessarily have this evolution of the music in the same way, right? So I guess on kind of a more meta level, it's an evolution of the way that we engage with music, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what Sousa was really concerned about at that era, where you get recorded stuff and you can just listen to amazingly good recording. And as the recording technology got better and better, pretty soon there wasn't the problem of the quality sounding canny. The quality sounded great, but you didn't have people participating. And in fact, we had entered this large realm of highly produced and owned by large conglomerate music industry and delivered to us. So we became a consumption group completely. Our society became, you only consume media through the people that produce media, and the people that produce media own it, or some other conglomerate owns it. In fact, law professor Lawrence Lessig has cited that passage that I just read quite a bit to argue in the creating of a system of copyrights in which the control of music are handed to the labels, because that's who actually owns the music at that point. And you have amazing history in this culture of, like, Prince, for example. When he passed away, a lot of people talked about his fight with the ownership of his music versus him owning it. You know, some of the content he created was signed away by some label. And of course, that label's not a person. It's a corporation that lives forever. Disney's a perfect example of that ever owning the cultural part of our society by this thing that's not even human. And that aspect of that realm that we're in, we're actually now, I feel like, leaving again. And it's because of things like podcasting and the easy ability for us to produce our own work. Mark, you're a performer, right? Do you perform and record in
San Jose? Yeah, we're actually playing tonight in San Jose. But
Where in San Jose?
Johnny V's. Johnny V's. Club in downtown. And we actually put out our own album on my label earlier this year. So, and I was going to say, I mean, you talk about that, but I think that started happening in the 60s or 70s. Hippie movement, punk rock, with fanzines, sure, when Xerox machines became prevalent, because then people could take, they didn't have to have a printing press, they could go to the Xerox. And it happened with the internet, and is happening with the internet, with video and audio. Punk rock really was about, you know, not signing up for that major label stuff that Prince did, and putting out your own records, putting out your own cassettes, you know. And that actually became even more democratized with being able to home recording studios. I have a 16-channel studio at home that cost me $800 or something. Recorded our first album there. The next one we went into a recording studio just to make it a little more polished because it was going out on vinyl. But all that kind of democratizes the experience of creation.
Yeah. So, and with that, of course, old media forms that existed left, right? I mean, of course, the wax cylinder no longer exists in any real way. But also big bands touring doesn't really exist anymore.
Right? Not much, no.
There are media forms that die out that used to happen. And we're seeing that right now with KOSP, unfortunately. We've seen, for the life of GeekSpeak, we've seen the rise and fall of optical recording at home. We've seen the rise and fall of the FireWire drive and many other technologies that are flash in the pan and probably not something that people are sad about leaving. But we're also seeing media forms change, like public radio having trouble staying afloat on FM. And that, of course, is sad. And there's definitely ways of making this station last for maybe another even 100 years. I'm not saying there's a death immediate, but there is this aspect that because of this new media forms being the democratization of it and more people being able to create content and more people being able to distribute it in different ways, there is a change, a shift that happens.
So, I mean, I listen to KOSP at home, but I listen over my Amazon Echo, which is actually streaming the signal, not listening to it over the air. So it could be a podcast.
I also listen to the stream because where I am, the FM broadcast is not as good. And in my car, even, the internet's actually easier than FM.
Yeah, and these kind of changes in business models, they're in all sorts of areas. So I am an app developer, and I am heavily into the iOS app development scene and trying to figure out how you can make a business out of that. And it's a really difficult thing to get your app out there in the way that people are going to buy it and you're going to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And to see people try to figure out how that's going to work parallels exactly what I see going on with my wife. She's trying to figure out how to make a living as an independent artist. There used to be a huge publishing industry around.
She's an animator.
She's an animator and an illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
And there used to be a huge publishing industry around illustration, and so many of these publishers are able to get what they're looking for practically nothing as far as money. And that's making artists seek a way to get their art out in front of people without the publishers.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, people are going directly from the creator to the public because the internet's completely opened this possibility up.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Anybody else want to talk on the subject? Ben?
That was Brian. Level, the only constant is change, really. And we see this with services. We see this with pretty much everything. And here we're seeing it again.
Definitely.
So a philosophical side of that big picture is, now that there's so much content, anyone can be a content creator. What do you think will happen when people can't find good content and it takes a lot of effort? Do you think there are going to be more conglomerates that come around and aggregate good content, and then we'll have, central providers again?
Yeah. You're talking kind of the role in on public radio, for example, is like a DJ, right? Person that actually listens to a lot of music, has a giant expertise, and then filters it out and gives it back to you and organizes it in such a way that makes a really cohesive piece, right. that art form. Yeah, that is really challenging. I don't think we've figured out how to do that well right now. Like, I can list a whole bunch of podcasts, but I don't know them all, right? And so it becomes this thing where you're constantly trying to find a good source. I think that the social media engines that exist right now, Facebook and Twitter and things of that nature, to some degree help with that, in the sense that the data is out there, what people are listening to. So I think it's a little more flexible. I think it's possible into the scene. At the same time, GeekSpeak, for example, we've been around for a long time, but in no way are we at a high level of listenership. I'm not sure exactly why that is, but it's one of those things that's kind of frustrating. How do you self-produce, for example?
Right. And you're kind of making my point there that people are using Facebook and other places to tell them what the good content is. And before, we were getting upset that, you know, Time Warner is the only one telling us what good cable content is. So how do we separate it out? Like, you know, so you get public radio and good public radio. Is there someone out there that can do that? I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
To add to that, I think one of the really interesting things about where we're headed, it seems like we're breaking down all sorts of walls about who is sort of the arbiter of good taste and what content should be flowing from stream to stream. And you're developing these short-lived and some longer-lived coalitions around, like if you take, for instance, Twitter, hashtags come and go, and people ride the wave while it continues, and some turn into movements like Black Lives Matter. So you don't exactly have, like, you also have, like, on the opposite end of the spectrum, there's Apple, like with Apple Music, where they're trying to put curation into music playlists. Mm-hmm. But at the opposite end, you have, like, people in a room together putting on a podcast for, you know, not necessarily like a huge national or international audience, but just enough people to get the word out that, hey, you might like this, or my friend said you might like this, or you might like this one episode. Like, there's nothing that says that you need to consume whole seasons of content. You could just sort of go piecemeal with it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I totally appreciate that. The hashtag turning into movements is a really great idea, a great example of a social media that's very flexible and fluid, actually helping to make large organizations exist. And large movements exist. Very cool, Dee Dee.
Lyle, I think one thing that what kind of sums it up is it's the definition of content that is what's happening now. I mean, we thought, you know, you mentioned the DJs, people playing records, you know, oh, we listen to this record, or we like this, or we like this show. It's the definition of content that's changing. I mean, my son will sit there and watch a guy play Minecraft and comment as he plays. Now, is that content? It is now.
It is. Definitely.
The guy's making over $1 million every year on his YouTube channel. So it's the definition of content that has changed the whole landscape. Now, what exactly is content?
Yeah.
Is it the definition of content, or who's defining it? It used to be defined to us because there was a very narrow group of publishers and broadcasters.
Yeah.
Yeah. True.
Well, I was also thinking in terms of if you are in charge of a media organization and you have to choose which thing you have to have on there, you're not going to take these big risks. Like, would you say to someone, hey, let's put a show on NBC that's about this guy who's going through Minecraft for a while and just commenting on it? That would
be a hard
insane
pitch.
Yeah. At the same time, now you're getting into this. Someone puts it up. If there are people who are interested, they show up. And it's not so much this guarantee. It is that democratization. You don't know where it's going to happen. It happens a lot more organically. It happens a lot more.
So the people are deciding. It's not so much some network executive that's saying, this is what's going to be popular. People are actually making a choice.
And itches are getting scratched that weren't scratched before. The people didn't even know were itches.
Good analogy there.
Awesome. All right. Well, you are listening to GeekSpeak on 88.9 FM, frequency modulation, for the last time, actually. This is KOSP and KOSP.org. I'm Lyle Troxell, and I'm speaking with a giant room of people, Mark and Lindsay and Al and Ben and Brian and Dee Dee and Miles. And here is Chandler to tell us who we're supported by.
KUSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT data protection, storage, and maintenance for business and home computers for over 10 years. More information at hasbtech.com.
And also by Mount Madonna School, presenting its 38th annual Ramayana, a sword and sorcery epic with an original rock and roll score and a cast of 200 who encounter good versus evil, duty, love, leadership, and sacrifice. June 10th, 11th, and 12th. Reserve tickets at mountmadonnaschool.org.
And I want to invite you to our live live event in Santa Cruz on May 21st. We are doing a Dr. Don, and then following that, a GeekSpeak new media introduction. We'll show you how on your smartphone, tablet, laptop, bring them with you, how to podcast, listen to podcasts, how to subscribe. And we'll also talk about YouTube channels and, in general, other ways of getting really rich content in your life. You have these devices you've paid for. They're a part of your life now. We'll help you a bit on connecting to this new forms of media, especially as potentially KOSP goes away from your life. We want to fill that void with amazingly rich content. Again, the event is downtown Santa Cruz on May 21st at the Cruzio offices, which is the old Sentinel building if you're a long lifetime member. I think that's, I won't give you the address. 877 Cedar Street. Thank you, Mark. Hey, he works there. And we're also, we have tickets available for free. Just go up to live.geekspeak.org. Again, that's live.geekspeak.org and register yourself. You do not need to buy a ticket. We're just trying to get an idea of how many people are coming. So we have lots of room, but please feel free to go up there and let us know you're coming by grabbing a free ticket. And you can also read about the event and such. News story. Hey, why don't we do a news story, folks? Unless there's more about media. Yeah. Al, go for it. You looked at me first, so go for it.
All right. Well, I think what I'd like to talk about is lactic acid, carbon dioxide, and Creative Commons.
Go for it. How are you going to do that?
So the way those things go together is there's this company, two design agencies came together, and they created a Brazilian billboard that goes in like one of those places where you sit and wait for the bus. You know,
it's kind of vertical things. Yeah.
Yeah. And what it does is it secretes this combination of carbon dioxide and lactic acid that simulates body sweat and you know, human breath.
Yeah. Why?
So, and they're making, what's the point of they're this? Making this design open to everybody, Creative Commons. You can have this design. You can build it yourself, and it will cost around $200.
But why would you want it to do this?
Well, that's the next thing.
Okay.
The reason they do this is because of the Zika virus carried by mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Apparently, mosquitoes are attracted to this scent.
And sweat and lactose?
Sweat, lactic acid, and human breath.
Okay.
And they can smell it up to a mile away.
Okay.
You know, I guess it depends on the person, but...
Yeah, some of us a little bit longer than others.
But it attracts the mosquitoes, and the mosquitoes go to this billboard, and they crawl inside, and then they can't get out.
Oh, it's a trap.
It's a trap. It's a mosquito trap. And what's kind of cool is there's a picture of this on the website, and it's in Spanish because it's in Brazil. But they say on the billboard...
Portuguese.
It's in the language they speak in Brazil. And it says... From what the translation says, it says, this billboard is catching mosquitoes and helping protect you. Okay. And that's in bold, like, accidents grotesque.
That's heavy, a font, everybody.
You know, it's like a really heavy font. And it's just the words. And as the mosquitoes get caught in this billboard, they get caught behind the words, and it fills in the words.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah. And so the letters are kind of outlined until they slowly fill with mosquito
corpus. And then they kind of fill up, and you can see how many mosquitoes are in this thing.
Okay. Okay, you've just done a social justice in some sense, a social responsibility, health, social health,
yeah.
Technical, biological, yeah. Amazing,
creative
advertisement,
commons.
Creative yeah. Commons,
design agency,
and you actually pulled in a font name in there. Al, congratulations,
there we
you
go.
Won GeekSpeak.
There's my story.
That's one of my favorite things about you is you just drop font names in your everyday conversation with anybody, really.
Well, that's the way it goes.
Okay, next...
Yeah. That was the sound of Mike dropping the mic.
Al dropped the mic on the way out. Yeah. Hey, Ben, you want to tell us about teens?
Oh, yeah. I found an interesting, fascinating infographic, which kind of tells us what we already know. And this is talking about electronic devices, like mobile devices, so smartphones and tablets and whatnot. And just two of the numbers in this infographic stuck out to me, which is that according to, by the way, this is a poll conducting for Common Sense Media, and it was of 1,240 interviews with parents and their children aged 12 to 18. That's the children aged 12 to 18, of course. And 50% of teens feel that they are addicted to their mobile devices.
How many percent?
50%. Half.
50%. I feel like they're
half.
Addicted.
Wow. And 59% of the parents feel that their teens are addicted to mobile devices.
It's a little bit more
so
than parents.
The parents are a little like, no, you really are addicted. Yeah, you really are. And then of parents that feel that they're addicted to their mobile devices, that's about a quarter. and a quarter of the teens feel that their parents are addicted to mobile. So those numbers are a little bit more consistent. But yeah, it's interesting. It also kind of raises the question to me of like, what does that mean to be addicted to your mobile device? You know, like, does that mean that you just can't put it down? Does it mean that you would choose to instead be on your mobile device rather than being social? I mean, some people prefer not to be as social. So it's kind of a tricky thing when you're talking about these things to separate out your own personal preferences in your interaction with the world with how the mobile device is changing things.
It's also like what it represents, right? So at one point, teens would be addicted to radio, and then they were addicted to television, and then they were addicted to their phones, they were addicted to books. Like, there's always this time where people are consuming tons of one type of thing, and of course, it looks like that's everything in their life. Of course, it's addiction. Phones are a little different in the sense that they're social, and they're media, and they're potentially creative.
Well, there's one more thing, which is that they're new, right? So people tend to complain most about the technologies that are the newest, right? Mm-hmm. So we were complaining about kids texting, and now we're complaining about iPads, and you know, so there's always the damn kids thing, you know.
Those darn kids. Thank you, Ben. Didi, hi.
Well, you know, speaking of childhoods and all the waves of nostalgia that have been hitting me since coming back into this air room, did you know that there's a video game Hall of Fame?
I didn't know that, but it makes sense.
Is this a physical place, or is this a place in a video game?
Or is this a virtual place of physical things?
That's
or
a good question.
That were virtual?
I think this is an actual thing with inductees and finalists and voting. And wow. But I won't get into those details. I'll just go straight to the good stuff. This year, Grand Theft Auto 3, Legend of Zelda, The Oregon Trail, The Sims, Sonic the Hedgehog, and Space Invaders have been inducted into this.
Wait, is this the first year of it? Because those are pretty good wins.
You said Space Invaders?
Space Invaders.
And Oregon Trail.
You have died of dysentery.
Yeah. Always put your friends' names on the tombstones.
Wait, so you guys did Oregon Trail in school as well?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. I did, too. That's a long time of Oregon Trails. Because I'm like 70 years old.
Oregon Trail
was
around for a long time. Yeah. There's probably some 3D Sims-like Oregon Trail thing that doesn't sell very well nowadays. But like,
they had an iOS game for a while that tried to mimic it. Really didn't touch on it at all.
Oregon Trail actually was a learning game that you played in school. I played on Apple IIs, I think. What did you guys play it on?
Max?
C64.
Ooh, down.
Drop Miles might win. It taught me that you could die of dysentery, but I never realized how horrible it would be to actually die of dysentery until, you know, like biology or something.
I think the death from Grand Theft Auto would be more horrible. So that game makes it as well.
Have you
played Grand Theft Auto 3?
Well, I think Grand Theft Auto 3 makes the list because it really solidified the sort of open field action that we are surrounded by in video games today. And
meaning instead of really strict narrative, like aliens are going to keep on coming from the top down to you and try to shoot them, which is Space Invaders. Yeah. It's instead do anything you want in this giant playground of space. And by the way, be really violent and horrible to people.
You could have been a pacifist gangster, I'm sure.
Yeah, like a lot of people played it that way.
I actually, the few times I've played that game, I've tried to abide by traffic laws and everything, and it's really hard. I was playing with a keyboard, and it's really hard to turn the wheel just a little bit to align yourself to, you know, going between the lines on the road.
Yeah.
But I just have to say, one of my favorite games that didn't quite make the list was in the final 15. Sid Meier's Civilization. Playing that game in all the afternoons after school is probably one of the reasons why I was so obsessed with computers.
Yeah.
And eventually started writing code into them as a living and surrounding myself with people who also do the same. So
that kind of indoctrinated you into geeky culture?
Yeah. The games were pretty much a constant from like age 5 until today.
Yeah, actually a quick straw poll. How many people here started with computers by playing games?
Raise your hand high. Okay, that's looks like more than half of the room. All but one person?
Does it count typing?
If Atari counts,
of course. Yes.
Well, does it count if you're typing it in out of the back of Byte magazine into your Apple TV?
Yes, it does. That's the thing, though, is a lot of times we're replaying these games, and what you do is you look for the patterns because you have to get through that level, so you learn what you did before and what failed, and you have to solve the puzzle, you have to figure out what's next, and that's kind of what programming is, figuring out the pattern, figuring out how to do the same thing over and over again and get a higher score.
Yeah, definitely.
All I can say about that is boom, boom, bum 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 bum.
That was really good, Al. Our stand-up, it sounded even better on headphones, everybody, and from listening at home, I'm sure, as well. I cover another news story. Miles, you've got one. Anybody, who else here? Raise several. Your hand if you've got another news story so I know to line you up. Okay.
Something, this is a tie-in with the beginning of our show, the beginnings of our show way back in the day, because we were talking about people ripping their CDs into MP3s and having this music be electronic, and how the Recording Industry Association of America and music industry in general was so skeptical about it and so against having people do this. So they have the media and you don't have the right to
make
it back.
What are you talking about? What?
Well, it just so happens that according to the Financial Times, Warner Music now gets more money from streaming than it does from CD sales.
Warner
Music.
Wow.
You mean like Spotify and Apple Music and Pandora and all
yeah.
that? Yeah. Well, okay.
That's where they bizarre. Were worried that, Are you saying that during the electronic media was going to kill their business. That was the line coming from Jack Valenti back in the day.
Well, being in a band, I can verify that you can't sell a CD to save your life. Nobody wants to buy a CD.
Yeah.
You can sell vinyl if it has a download code in it.
Right.
Or vinyl for people that like vinyl, but nobody buys CDs. At all.
So are you selling your streams somehow?
We are. We're on Bandcamp and other places, but we also have vinyl, so we have codes in that. So.
Hey, Mark, you're on air. What's the name of your band?
SA90, like the old TDK cassettes, SA90.
That is way geeky.
And awesome. We're at SA90punk.com, since you let me.
Thank you. Definitely love it. Good with that story?
Yep.
All right. Brian, come on down.
So we've talked about all sorts of technologies that have risen, maybe even fallen during the years of GeekSpeak. But this one kind of blew my mind. I didn't think we were to hear yet, but IBM has just opened up a cloud service for their latest computer, which is a 5-qubit quantum computer.
What? No, they didn't.
No.
That doesn't exist
really?
Yet.
Really?
What?
That's what the article's about. So, are you going to call me on this? Are you going to say this is not a true article?
No, it's true. Five qubit. I mean, sure. Okay, but go on. Describe what it can do.
This means I have to learn what a qubit is. I know what a kilobit is, but
okay. So, quantum computing is a completely different style of computing than we're used to. Digital ones and zeros.
Keep in mind, when you talk about quantum stuff, you get stupid. So go on.
and I'm not going to pretend to know everything Good. About quantum right. computing. But if you imagine a computer that can exist or hold the state of things in multiple states at one time, mm-hmm. so it can find the solution to whatever your algorithm is, through that system, you may not need as many bits to do really high calculation computing.
Rather, a lot of numeric stuff ends up being a lot easier. Factoring prime numbers, for example, is one of the holy grails for quantum computing.
Exactly. It may not be as good at playing Grand Theft Auto because nobody's figured out how to code that yet into it. But I thought the fascinating thing is they're opening this up as a cloud service to students and researchers in schools.
Cool. That's way
and,
cool.
And that just shows how far we've come in the computing age that's now available. And the whole industry is working towards a 50-qubit computer.
Awesome.
Which we'll see. Maybe that's just over the horizon.
Right. Cool. All right, Ben, you're up next.
Yes, indeed. So some of the time we would cover stories like NASA has released a bunch of patents for technology, and there are 56 formerly patented technologies that now you can use these patents, and
right.
that's exciting and everything, and we might kind of cover it generally. Of course, the question is, how do you find out about what patents are in the public domain and,
right.
and available?
You look at that one story and you're like, oh, that's interesting. Are there more?
You don't want to get your patent news from GeekSpeak.
No.
That's not.
You go out of business quickly.
Yeah, right. So it turns out that in addition to, actually, they did make 56 patents public domain, which is cool. But in addition to that, NASA put together a search engine where they can where you can go on and you can search what patents are available in the public domain. Versus maybe they're not. And
awesome.
So that means if you're creating something, you can poke around on their search engine and try to find patents that are available to you. And, you know, then you know that you can use this, or you might not be able to use it. So
right.
So yeah, it's pretty cool.
NASA puts out a public domain patent searching system. Thank you very much for that. I saw that you were trying to gather people up for next news stories. Looks like DD won.
If you can call talking about The Rock winning.
Wait, The Rock, you mean the wrestler and actor?
Yeah, Can You Smell What The Rock Is Cooking?
That's the name of the app?
Oh, no, it's called Rock Clock.
Okay.
It might have helped me get here a little earlier, actually.
You were addicted to it?
No, it's The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, encouraging you every morning to wake up. So, there's a basic alarm, which could be The Rock saying simple things like beep, beep, beep. Beep. And there's no snooze because The Rock doesn't believe in snooze. But it's also like if you have a goal, like say you want to write a screenplay or redo your website, The Rock will also every day sort of give you inspirational messages like you can do it, but in sort of a typical Rock fashion.
You can do it!
Yeah. And, you know, it became really sort of popular this past week, so you can check it out on the iOS store or the Google Play Store.
And of course, all the stuff we talk about during the show, Chandler gets up on air, or gets on our website, geekspeak.org, and we fill out a whole page. So anything we talk about, we actually have extra links. Today is going to be a very busy web page, obviously. Who's up next?
Do we want to do underwriting and then maybe a crazy USB if we have time?
Let's do some underwriting. Yes.
Right. KUSB is supported by Arts Council Santa Cruz County, celebrating students in the arts with the student art exhibit at the County Government Center through Friday. Details at artscouncilsc.org.
QSP is also supported by Solar System, Inc., providers of efficient and sustainable solar energy system options to homes and commercial businesses across San Jose and the Monterey Bay Area. Information at 877-50-SUNNY.
Good number. Very awesome. Hey, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. You can use our stuff, reuse our stuff any way you'd like it. You can even make money on it. Just let them know the geek said hi. Let's go ahead and do a... You got one, Alex?
Yeah. Seriously, I don't even have to think about it. There's so amazing. Many crazy USB devices out there that there's enough. I mean, how much time do we have?
1 minute.
1 minute. Oh, as always. Well, there's the USB eyelash curler. I'm not sure. You plug it into your USB port, and then you're able to curl your eyelashes. And I'm not 100% sure who they are targeting for this, because most of the people I know that are heavily into computers and crazy USB devices.
I would use that. Oh, I would use
maybe
that.
Ben would use that. But many of them really don't even particularly care to comb their hair.
Right.
So, you know, curling your eyebrows, I don't know. That's one of them. There's the USB toothbrush. And I can't imagine the scenario that has to, what the environment is where you'd be brushing your teeth.
Your car has a USB now. You could do it on your way to work.
I could brush my teeth in the car. I'm sure that would be perfectly.
I was on an airplane yesterday. It had USB right there in the seat.
It would totally be not gross to be brushing your teeth in an airline in a seat, you know.
Thank you very much, Al, for Crazy USB of the Week. Love it. We'll keep putting that on the podcast when Al comes and visits us. Hey, I want to let you know that this was Independent Public Radio 88.9 KOSP Santa Cruz, streaming live worldwide at KOSP.org. This is the close of the program for On Air, but it's not the end of the programs on KOSP by any means. In fact, we'll be running for the next 2 months, and if we find someone that can come in and help out, we will keep producing GeekSpeak. We just need KOSP, excuse me. We'll just need quite a bit of funding to do that. GeekSpeak is going to continue, as will Dr. Don and a few other shows, as podcasts. If you don't know how podcasts work, why don't you come down to our live show? That is May 21st at 10 a.m. in downtown Santa Cruz at the Cruzio Works office, which is 877 Cedar Street. You can learn out more information about that at live.geekspeak.org. Again, live.geekspeak.org on your web browser. You can go ahead and let us know you're coming by getting a free ticket. Dr. Don will do a show, and then after that, the geeks will teach you how to participate in new media. I want to thank all the geeks that were here today. It's a large list of them. Mark and Al and Lindsay and Chandler, our intern. Thank you so much. And Brian and Ben and Dee Dee and Miles. And of course, all the amazing staff and volunteers that have made KOSP a place that welcomes creativity and engagement in new content creation for the last 18 years of the GeekSpeak program. I also want to thank you, Greg, listening remotely. We're calling it this episode The Fellowship of the Geeks, which is episode 18 of our 16th season, because, of course, we started with zero being geeks. Thank you very much for listening to this show. And thank you for participating by being a subscriber and participant of KOSP over the years. We'll hopefully see you downtown and in podcast form. Coming up next is, you want to get those people in here because they have to start a show, and I don't actually have anything to play. Well, we have a few more seconds as we wait in. This is live radio, folks. The person that's coming in next was intimidated by the 27 geeks that were in the room. So we do need to get a CD of theirs on air. Miles, you used to sing our theme song when I'd mess up on the board. Can you sing the old theme song for me?
We're through with being cool. We're through with being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twits.
Ninnies.